Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Monday, January the 10th, 2022, and we've had a bit of a holiday break. But today, along with my partner in this project, Jimmy Sexton, we are continuing our discussion of the great book, Charles Adams, For Good and Evil, Taxes and Civilization. For those who haven't read that, read it. For those who don't have it, get it. So you have it there to read. This, I think, Jimmy, you would agree, is must reading for all. Yes?
I mean, this is right up there next to the Bible, in my view.
Exactly. Yeah, well, you know, in terms
maybe even in front of it,
the wisdom is incredible. The wisdom is incredible, but there's so much in this book. But he helps us at the end by laying out these eternal lessons. And what we've been doing, of course, is theming our podcast around these lessons. And we've done 1 to 7. And today, here's lesson 8. Taxpayer discontent threatens the peace and prosperity of the social order. More so than misbehaving taxpayers do. Consequently, the criminal arm of the tax system should be directed against oppressive tax agents rather than angry taxpayers. Wow, that is interesting. Clearly aspirational, not likely to happen in the foreseeable future, but let's go through that again. Taxpayer discontent threatens the peace and prosperity of the social order. Pausing for a minute, that reminds me of the Canada's Constitution, peace, order, and good government. Yeah, maybe it's speaking to Canada. More so than misbehaving taxpayers do. Consequently, the criminal arm of the tax system should be directed against oppressive tax agents rather than angry taxpayers. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's interesting. I was reading an article this morning in the Wall Street Journal. It says, paranoia is a rational response to a world gone mad. And it's specifically talking about all these violence and riots and everything else that's happening in the United States and how many safe neighborhoods have now become dangerous neighborhoods because there's just so much crime. And what's interesting in there is it's talking about that the people committing the crimes are basically just doing it for no reason. It's just like casual crime, like just to do it. And the thought occurred to me, you know, if we look back through the history of civilization in the world, you know, when taxpayers have reached enough, there's been revolts and civil unrest in civilizations past before the crumbling of the tax system. Now, I would argue that people are beginning to revolt because they're being overgoverned, and that people are not meant to be governed to the extent that they are, and there's discontent, which is causing civil unrest. And I don't think even the people, what I thought was so interesting is that people are just doing casual crime for no apparent reason. And I think that people have become so unhappy that they might not even know why they're revolting, but they know it needs to happen.
Well, I think they're clearly living under siege. I mean, I think that, you know, you talk about being overgoverned. You know, there's no question there are far, far too many laws. There's no question. I mean, it's interesting that it's as though people, you know, they seem to think that the world seems to operate on the basis that we need a rule for everything rather than a fundamental principle of basic morality and decency. Agreed?
I agree.
I mean, don't you
think, micromanagement, right?
Yeah. I mean, don't you think we'd be better off with maybe 10 commandments, for example, than, you know, 1 million pages of regulations?
100%. But I do think that, you know, the taxpayer discontent threatens peace and prosperity of the social order. I mean, I think that history has shown that happens once people reach a boiling point.
Yeah, and it is, I think that not only are people, individuals reaching a boiling point, but if you look at the process of trying to get this Build Back Better legislation through the U.S., right? I mean, the whole thing is a massive tax bill, agreed?
Yes.
I mean, when it reaches the point where nothing can even be accomplished, right? Yep. You know, without it turning into a tax issue. To me, that suggests a real imbalance in society. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I did a post on LinkedIn last week that was kind of meant to be nonchalant, but it actually got quite a bit of engagement. And basically what I said is that, you know, democracies are inherently flawed, right? Because when they start off, you have these very big issues that need to be addressed, and people vote to address them, and the government's small and moderate. But every time somebody runs for office, they have to promise the voters something, which requires more government to administer it, which requires more tax revenue to pay for it. And at some point, this cycle of continuously promising more and continually needing more money to not only provide those things promised, but also to pay for the bureaucracy to administer all these programs, it implodes. It becomes unsustainable. And I think that's what we're seeing in all of this legislation now with Build Back Better. They're trying to find the money for all of this stuff that they've promised.
Yeah.
And so there's no other way to pass laws other than to make them tax laws, because there's no other way to pay for it. The governments are too broke.
Things are, I think, are definitely reaching a breaking point. Years ago, I remember, you know, some of my more conservatively inclined friends would say, you know, that a government should be just in the, people shouldn't even know it's there, right? And, you know, if government is not there, right, if people don't know that it's there, then I think people generally will step up to the responsibility of being generally decent, moral, creating communities to help each other. The pervasiveness of this stuff is actually preventing the creation of honest, decent community, I think, because you can't do anything, you know, without being in violation of some regulation or another, you know, et cetera.
You know, it's interesting. I had a meeting today with a gentleman who is a dual citizen, one of his citizenships being American, young guy, you know, about my age, probably late 30s, early 40s, and tax compliant. And, you know, he makes under the foreigner income exclusion. He doesn't really, you know, have any big tax issues. And he came to me to expatriate because he is just scared. He said, listen, I can't sleep at night with what I read of what's happening to people and the consequences and the potential, you know, penalties and the horror stories I hear about in going to this, how people are treated by the Internal Revenue Service and the tax agents. He goes, I just don't want to live with this anxiety. I have no positive feelings for being a United States citizen. The pride of being a United States citizen has now turned to fear of violating laws that I don't even know exist.
You know, Jimmy, that is so common. I mean, I have had that exact conversation with so many people. You know, these people come to me and, you know, like there's nothing going on in their tax law, nothing at all. You know,
nothing.
Anybody could do their return. TurboTax could do their return.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and they're compliant because it's impossible to not be compliant. It's so simple if you just file a return, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're actually on that level, but I agree with you. You know, they want to expatriate and they're young. And I'm not, you know, I mean, I understand the problems, but I mean, I'm not one of these guys who's out, you know, promoting expatriation here. Stop everybody on street corners. Have you thought of renouncing U.S. citizenship? You know, sort of thing. You know, and I say to them, okay. And I say, you know, I put it to them and say, you know, you really don't have any problems right now. You know, you're in your 30s. Your career is not necessarily settled. I mean, do you really want to renounce U.S. citizenship at this point in your life? And what I'm finding is that a lot of them are saying absolutely, positively, yes, I don't want to have.
No. Not, and this is exactly what I said to him, because he's, you know, he's contemplating making some investments and some things like that. And I said, well, probably, you know, I'm sure we can find a structure that'll, you know, minimize everything and keep everything compliant. And he was like, absolutely not. I don't want the stress.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, really reasonable. Well, where this really came home to me was, actually, here's another example. About a year or so ago, this guy starts emailing me, you know, just out of the blue, right? And he was obviously in extreme distress. And, you know, finally I just said to him, I said, look, sure, he didn't even want to identify who he was. That's okay, you know. But I said, look, honestly, you really don't have any problems here, okay? I mean, you know, you are making this stuff up yourself, you know, from what you're reading.
Yeah.
His response to me was interesting. And it's why I actually made the decision to help him, you know, through the thing. Because I was kind of, I didn't really want it. You know, after a few emails, I really didn't want to engage them anymore until he said this. He said, well, you know, it's one thing for you to say that. Okay, you know, because you understand this, right? You know, my problem is that I have no way of understanding this. So, you know, I just have to live, you know, in this constant state of anxiety, and there's just no way it's worth it. I want out.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and that really, you know, I thought summed it up.
It's, I think so too.
You know, it comes down to, you know, we've got a system that is so overbearing, so penalty laden, so arbitrary and unpredictable in its application that people are making the decision that they just don't want to engage with it at all. And that's really what expatriation is. It's a decision. It's not a decision of I don't want to be a U.S. citizen. It's a decision of I can't stand the stress of engaging with the United States.
Yep. And, you know, I want to go back to this point because I think that that's a really good point, right? Because the fear is the harsh treatment by the revenue agents, right? Taxpayer discontent threatens the peace and prosperity of the social order more than misbehaving taxpayers. Consequently, the criminal arm of the tax system should be directed against oppressive tax agents rather than angry taxpayers. And what I find so intriguing about this is when the U.S. income tax was first instituted, it had a top rate of like 7% or something, right? And they collected more revenue off of that than when it was at 70-something percent. And so the way I read this is that it's better to have happy taxpayers that are cheating a little bit, but basically more or less happy to pay, because 7%, nobody's going to try to evade 70%. A few might cheat a little bit, but the vast majority will just pay it. So it seems to me like they have these super, and the result of trying to collect this super high taxes has been these really aggressive tax agents that people have to live in fear of and expatriate to avoid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, people are being basically frightened out of their citizenship.
What's your worst revenue agent story?
I don't have any direct ones, actually, because I've never had anybody who I'm not a tax preparer. I help people with expatriation. I've never had anybody I've helped have a single problem ever. So I mean, I live
John,
the story.
John, put your iPad down a little bit. I can only see your forehead.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, most of the you know, the stories I get are the people who've gotten these penalties for these 3520s and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, but there's an alarming number of people getting this stuff. What's happening is that these rules are no longer being applied in the circumstances they were intended for.
Well, I mean, I think what the IRS does, right, is they always take the most extreme position that can be argued under the law, that is the greatest detriment to the taxpayer. And that's the position that they take against the taxpayers. And how can you have a civilized society where you've created such an animosity that, you know, that citizens are afraid of their government, of their tax collectors, to that extent?
Well, here's a very practical example of that, Jimmy. And I do see, I see this all the time, okay, is that with automatic penalty assessment, right, on things like 3520s, 5471s, what have you, you know, people are just reasoning, well, what's the point? If I fix it, I'm going to get a penalty.
Yeah, it is. And look, I understand the you know, penalties, but penalties should not be automatic and they should not be the norm. Penalties should be when somebody's intentionally done something wrong. But these automatic penalties is just assuming that everybody did it for nefarious reasons, right? That they intentionally did this when in reality, 99% of the time it was an accident.
Or I think it may be evolving to the point where, you know, they're using penalties as nothing more than revenue raising measures.
Well,
you know, on that, one thing that's interesting is if you look at the changes in the FBAR rules in, what was it, 2003, 2004, I've always found it interesting that that stuff came in as a revenue offset.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think that's very, very telling. Very telling.
I mean, it's almost like the you know, the penalties are like the revenue bonuses, right? It's like a secondary tax system on top of the regular tax system.
Exactly, with a much higher cost. With a much higher cost. Almost as though if you look at the U.S. tax system, right? You know, what are the components? All right, so we have something to do with raising revenue and rules for paying taxes, right? But we also have another layer to it, a parallel layer, if you will, that has to do with penalty assessments, right? You know, raising penalties. And it makes me wonder if, I mean, let's look at, for example, one of these 3520 penalties, right, that goes out. So these things are being issued in the context where there's no tax issue whatsoever, right? In other words, the late filing or the non-filing had no bearing at all on the tax owing, none.
Yep.
And that is very problematic, I think. Very problematic.
No, listen, I mean, the fact that you can assess penalties when there's zero, when the United States is not damaged or harmed, is kind of ridiculous. Right? Well, you have somebody, the U.S. is not, if somebody late files a 35, I mean, normally when you think of penalties, I mean, the penalties are supposed to be something punitive to compensate somebody for an injury that somebody else caused them. And at the end of the day, the United States suffered no injury. If there's zero taxes due.
Well, that's true. And you know, it's an interesting point of view. It sort of equates penalties with damages in, say, a, you know, a civil context, though, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, I mean, it's clearly time to rethink the whole role of penalties. And like, I think the problem with these tax systems generally is they're collapsing under their own weight because there is no way for people to comply with this stuff anymore.
Yep.
Not even, and the one, and then there are the ones who are particularly bothered by it, and they say, well, I'll get rid of U.S. citizenship because I can't comply with the laws, or I don't know if I'm complying with the laws, or something of that nature.
And you know,
we look at... We look at Mr. Adams, you know, lesson 8, right? And he talks about criminal arm of the tax system directed against the agents. I mean, let's maybe tone that down a little bit and look at it this way. What we are seeing is more and more lawsuits, you know, direct lawsuits against the U.S. government over things like FATCA, you know, transition tax. I mean, I do not recall, you know, this number of lawsuits in the past. I mean, maybe they were there, but I never saw them. But I mean, we've got lawsuits against U.S. Treasury in various countries over the FATCA issues. You know, you talk about people being frightened out of their citizenship. We have 2 lawsuits against the State Department, you know, trying to force them to allow people to renounce, etc. And I wonder if that isn't sort of a milquetoast version of his language here. You know, the criminal arm should be directed against oppressive tax agents.
Well, I think that that's part of it. I think you can actually take this a little bit further and say that there's basically become sort of 2 classes of citizenship in the United States: those who work for the government and those who don't. And
one at war with the other.
It really is like that. I mean, look. If you look at the whole system that you have of criminal justice in the United States with plea bargains, and you look at the IRS tax system, the people that are trying to enforce these laws, meaning the U.S. attorneys from the Department of Justice and the revenue agents, nobody is trying to do right by their fellow citizens. Those that are in charge of enforcing the law, rather than one being decent human beings towards people, they are always, they live in, within the agencies, there's so much competition to be the best and get promoted and convict that they don't think of the impact that they're having on their fellow citizens. And they just always try to take the harshest penalties, the harshest position. And so, yeah, it's no wonder the people live in absolute fear of those enforcing the laws because they're not enforced justly.
Yeah.
They're enforced in the harshest manner possible.
And so, yeah, and arbitrary in their enforcement, period, whether they're enforced. So there's arbitrariness, right, whether they're enforced. And of course, you know, once they're enforced, how they're enforced. You know, as I've said many times, to me, this is evidence of society that has evolved from a system of rule of law to a more oppressive rule by law, right?
Yes, I would agree.
Everybody's in violation of something, you know, 24/7.
Yep.
Well, if you were in a position where you could create a tax system from the ground up, what do you think, first of all, what do you think taxation even should be about?
Well, I mean, look, I do think that it's clear that there is a purpose for government. Government does need to exist, and government needs funding to exist. But this, I think the purpose is that you first need to determine what it is a government is supposed to supply its citizens, right? In my mind, it's, you know, some infrastructure, protection, and a just and equitable judicial system, right? And that doesn't cost, but the government's not intended to be all things. It's not intended to be Big Brother, right? And so I think it kind of needs to be figured out, okay, what does it cost to administer this government? And that's how much money the government gets. I mean, I've said this before, I think the Swiss have a pretty good system, right? All the people have to vote on how much money, on you know, government spending bills and on the taxes. The people control the purse strings. The government can't they can propose spending bills, but they can't pass them without the consent of the people.
Do you think there ought to be an income tax at all?
I don't know that the tax should be an income tax. I mean, I personally feel that an income tax is just theft, right? I mean, it's extortion. I think to live in a country, you ought to pay a fixed membership fee, basically, right?
Let's talk about that a little bit. Now, you know, I had a conversation, you know, so you're talking possibly about a poll tax.
Could be.
Yeah. So,
or excise taxes. I have no problem with consumption taxes. Not excise taxes.
I don't either. I mean, it seems to me the consumption tax is guaranteed that everybody pays some tax, right?
Yes. And I think it logically follows that those with more are going to pay more tax.
Those who consume more would pay more tax.
Well, yeah, because they have more. Logically, in my mind, they would consume more.
So the Bahamas, right, is a place where I believe it runs, it has no income tax.
Right.
And I've always found the career of Sir John Templeton fascinating. He was a guy who renounced U.S. citizenship 2 years after the Subpart F rules came into effect. I'm sure that was the reason. He becomes a citizen of the Bahamas where he lives. And so he renounces U.S. citizen. If he remained a U.S. citizen, well, maybe he never would have had the same amount of wealth if he remained a U.S. citizen. I don't know. But the first thing is, the Subpart F regime drove him out of the United States. I think that's fairly clear. You know, the U.S. lost the ability to, you know, tax the state, et cetera. But so you look at somebody like Templeton, right, moves to the Bahamas. And it is, I think, in fairness, a tax haven for somebody with that degree of income. Would you agree?
They call it a tax oasis.
A tax oasis, yes, a tax oasis. I mean, he's not paying income tax. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to, you know, say he's got, you know, a million times what the average Bahamian has. He's not going to consume a million times the amount, right? So the argument, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with this, but the argument is that to have a system based on sales taxes alone is a regressive system. What are your comments on that? You know, meaning the poor pay disproportionately more.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that I don't necessarily know that. I mean, it could be, but look, the wealthy people that I know certainly consume a hell of a lot more and spend a lot of money on very unnecessary things. That are very expensive, that would contribute a lot to revenue of the government. Now, certainly that probably impacts their financial well-being less than it would of say the poor. But, you know, look, I personally believe everybody needs to pay something, right? If everybody's benefiting from the government, everybody needs to pay something.
Yeah, let me stop you on that. I mean, I do agree with you on that. And I think that a sales tax is a way of getting everybody to pay something. I think a poll tax is a way of getting everybody to pay something. But is it just that democracies are sort of built in such a way that that it is possible for a whole group to exempt themselves from taxation? I mean, if you look at the United States, right?
Certainly. Yeah.
Romney said that half the people didn't pay federal taxes or something like that.
Yeah, I think more.
How is this possible?
I think it's like 56%, right? I mean, I think you wait, you mean that half of the people, meaning half of the population of the United States.
Well, those apparently are what statistics are. This is what Romney got caught complaining about one day. I think his figure was the time 49% of Americans don't pay.
Yeah, I think I read something last year that in 2019 or 2020 or something, it was like 56% didn't pay. And it's because of all the...
That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people, Jimmy. You know, particularly when you get Americans abroad shaken down for having mutual funds.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a whole lot. I mean, it's a whole lot of people, right? I mean, look, at the end of the day, I have a very simple belief that I've held for a long time, and that is people don't value what they don't pay for, right? If you give somebody easy come, easy go.
You mean, for example, free legal advice, Jimmy? Would it include that?
Yes. And therefore, I think it's important for people to pay something. Even if they're poor, even if it's a little bit, everybody's got to have some skin in the game. Otherwise, they're not, and take it seriously, right? If you're not paying any taxes, what do you give a shit what the government does and passes laws and everything else, as long as you can get more? But if you have to pay for that something, if it's going to come out of your pocket, even if you're poor, and impact you, you're going to be engaged and educated about what the government's doing. And you certainly have a better chance of it not getting out of hand.
Well, you know, to put it another way, that, as goes the responsibility to contribute to the community, so goes the interest and responsibility to pay attention to the community.
Yeah.
You know, well, I think that's probably, I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Or listen.
Private.
Or you know what? You say this, listen, under this threshold, there's no income tax, but you don't get a vote. If you want to vote, you got to pay taxes. Because why should people that aren't contributing anything get to vote? Because they're citizens. I think that's ridiculous. I mean, you have the vast majority of people, you have 56% of the people in the United States not paying taxes, and they're the ones that get to decide how everything goes when they're not paying for it?
Yeah, that's not right. They vote for things that will allow them to continue not paying taxes.
Of course.
You know, it's almost as though, you know, the wealthy need political influence to protect themselves from the masses.
Well, yeah, and I would say that, you know, what's happening is that it's gotten beyond the point where their political influence can really help them to the degree that they need to, right? Like they might escape the crosshairs this time, but the tax system's coming for them.
Well, we've talked about that, escaping this time with this proposed wealth tax thing, which I just think is unbelievable. It is unbelievable. I mean, it's such an escalation in the complexity and viciousness of the tax system. I mean, is a tax system supposed to be vicious?
I don't think so. I think you said it best earlier, you know, you shouldn't even notice the government.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a very interesting comment, because I was trying to explain to people what it's like living in Dubai. Because I always tell people I feel so free here, and everybody I know feels free here. And you don't feel the government here. You don't even notice them.
That would be like being reborn, Jimmy. It'd be like being reborn.
I mean, listen, I actually get... So I'll tell you, one of the things here in Dubai is they actually call their government office... says happiness centers, and their big concern. I'm not saying they get it right all the time, but they are genuinely concerned about their population being happy, so that they'll want to come here, live here, and stay. They've actually sent out blanket text messages to the whole country saying, hey, we hope you're having a great day. If you have any suggestions, please click on this link and like give them to us.
Oh my God. That is unbelievable. I can't even imagine such a thing.
I mean, at least once or twice a year, I get an email from the government customer service excellence program or something, you know, asking all kinds of questions, even about, are their websites easy to understand? Do they function properly? Are they fast? I mean, it's incredible.
It is. It is incredible. I mean, it's just, I mean, maybe because, you know, the country's only 50 years old, had the opportunity to learn from all these other mistakes. Maybe these things just go through cycles. But, you know, you look at what's happening in Canada, Australia, United States, UK, and it is clearly overly burdensome. Would you agree?
I would agree. That's why we're going to redesign the tax system, John, you and me.
Yeah, on that note, we'll pick it up next week. But, you know, I mean, Adams is right. As go taxes, so go societies and civilizations. And so much of what makes life so difficult, so sometimes miserable in these first world democracies are the tax systems, no doubt about it.
I couldn't agree more.
All right. On that note, where would people get a hold of you?
For those who want Wisdom
in between our Monday podcasts.
That's right. If they need to find me in between the Monday podcasts, shoot us an email at info@esquiregroup.com.
All right. That's great. Thanks very much, Jimmy. We will pick it up next week.
See you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks.